Well, it must be that time again, 1930 UTC, because you are listening to Tobe on Anon Radio. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in today and wondering what I might be thinking about. Well, I'm glad you asked, because I just was watching TV and I saw another commercial that is pissing me off, and it's the commercial for Virtual Mouse, except it's not a commercial for Virtual Mouse, and that's what's pissing me off. And my cat's pissed off too. I don't know if you've seen this commercial yet. I don't know what it's actually for. Maybe car insurance. It might be a commercial for cellular phone service. I have no idea. But the way they're telling the story and the stuff that's going on in the background, you know, you are led to believe that somebody's developing a product called Virtual Mouse. What is Virtual Mouse, you may be asking me? Well, apparently it's some kind of virtual reality helmet or virtual reality goggles for cats. And you buy these and you strap them to your cat's head, and apparently they see a virtual mouse and they can run around chasing virtual mice. Yeah, sheer genius. Brilliant. I want one. I have a cat. Well, I sat there watching the commercial. I got really excited about virtual mouse for cats, virtual reality for kitties. That's a good idea. And I grab the phone and I'm getting ready to dial that 800 number, but of course there's no 800 number at the end of the commercials, even though they show the trucks driving down the driveway full of virtual mouse. No, do I get to get one? No. Don't try to sell me products that don't exist. I mean, if you're advertising, you're trying to sell your little Tobster some kind of product. And I want to buy Virtual Mouse. If you do not have Virtual Mouse, do not try to sell Virtual Mouse to me. You're wasting your money and your time, and you're just pissing me off. If you want to go to war, yeah, that's fine. If you want me to think you are the cool guy, bring me Virtual Mouse. It's just that simple. I can't imagine what Virtual Mouse would cost, but since it doesn't exist, it doesn't matter. So I don't have to worry about getting the money. As you know, I have issues with money. So I don't have a problem with money. I hate money, but it's hard to explain. Just what you need to know about Tobe and the money situation is I'm not allowed to have money. That sounds like something crazy to say, but no, it's absolutely true. I can't have money. It's just a bad idea for everybody all the way around. For one, there's an ancient proverb. You probably know it. It goes something like, "A fool and his money are soon partying." And homie, let me tell you, I am that fool. So, yeah, I don't get to have money, so I don't get to buy Virtual Mouse, the virtual reality mouse simulator for cats, even though it's the most brilliant product I've heard of in the last 20 years. The other day I was in Com, somebody asked me, well, if you don't have any money, what is it that you do for a living? Or I can't remember how it was worded, but you know, what is your profession? What do you do all day? Well, the truth of the matter is I do nothing. I don't do jack. What do I do for a living? I live. What do I do for a living? You're witnessing it in real time. I do nothing. Or I do everything, you know, however you want to look at it. Glass half empty, glass half full. Not with Tobe. It's either all or nothing. And I can't tell the difference, to be perfectly honest. When asked what my job is or what my profession is, I usually just spout out a couple of stock answers that are oddly enough true, but sound facetious enough to humor most people. And the last time I was asked that, I just cranked out three of those sort of stock answers. But the truth of the matter is, if you want to know what it is that I do or don't do, I am a rogue scientist. Yes, it's true. I'm a rogue scientist. I'm basically a master criminal. I am a super villain, just like you would see in any James Bond movie or even in a cartoon. But the difference between me and them is that I don't actually do anything. I don't try to take over the world. I don't try to do any other crazy plots or plans that master villains do or rogue scientists do. And it's not for a lack of wanting to do it. It's just that there's a lot of responsibility in being a rogue scientist and a master criminal. For one, collateral damage. I mean, you've read comic books, you've seen the movies, you know what supervillains do. They break a lot of stuff. There's a lot of collateral damage, and that gets real expensive real fast to clean up. So, like a farmer, I am basically subsidized by the government. That's right, I'm a subsidized rogue scientist. Instead of building a robot army to take over the world that would, you know, cause a lot of property damage and a lot of loss of life and generally cost everybody tons of money, it's just cheaper for the government to send me a check every month not to do anything. So I don't. And that's why you haven't seen any influx of new designer drugs. That's why you haven't seen anybody, you know, stealing paintings with laser beams or anything. You know, that's my job, and I don't even do it. Yeah, I mean, when I say I don't do it, I just, well, the truth of the matter is, and I'm going to come clean right now, kids, it's true, I am in fact building a robot army. I know that's difficult to believe, but I've got one. Now you might be wondering, but Tobe, you just said you were subsidized. Well, it's true, but you know there's guidelines that I can work within. I can't weaponize anything, and it's a numbers game. You know, I can't produce a million robots, and so when I say I have a robot army, it's a looser definition of the word army than you might previously been used to. A more accurate statement might be, I am building a robot platoon, or I have a robot platoon. I've got about 20 robots. I don't really know how many. I count them occasionally, and I always forget one that I left somewhere else in some other room. Or I tend to cannibalize my own robots. You know, I get a good idea, and I'm like, oh, I don't have any more of such and such part, and so I got to go take some other robot apart and then use those parts to build a new robot. So there's a neutral net robot gain, sort of a robot neutral buoyancy, if you will. I could go count them. I don't even know where they all are. They move. I can't find them. They roll under stuff. The cat starts whacking at them. I don't know where they go. But yeah, somewhere between 20 and 24. I think the last time I actually tried to count, it was like 22 or 23, and I know I've taken one or two apart since then to build them into something else. These are not large robots. Most people probably wouldn't feel threatened by them if they were to see them. The biggest one probably isn't more than a foot tall. Most of them are much smaller than that. They probably average around 6 inches in height. And I know what you're thinking now, Tobe, how can you be building robots if you don't have any money? Well, the truth is, I build them out of junk. Any junk I can find, whether it be a tape recorder or a VCR or an old printer, whatever anybody has old junk, they give it to me. And I take it apart, take all the good parts out of it, and then I build robots out of the parts. These robots are not programmed. That's right, these are not digital robots. There's no computers in these robots. They are all analog. They are all hardwired. They are all non-programmed, so they have their own artificial intelligence. And I hate to use that word artificial intelligence because there's no such thing as artificial intelligence. There is either intelligence or there isn't, and that intelligence is real or it is not. You can't have fake intelligence. You know, if you're pretend smart, you're not really smart. You know, so artificial intelligence is not intelligence, so it's zero. It's, it means nothing. I prefer the term machine intelligence or just intelligence. When I talk about my robots and when I talk about things like cellular automata, I often use the word artificial life. That's a more accurate statement because what we are modeling with these robots and cellular automata, for that matter, is life. We are modeling life and how living things actually do their stuff. So the better term being artificial life, since real life comes from nature and artificial life comes from us, that's what we're going to call it. Tobe, how are you going to take over the world with a platoon of tiny robots? Hey, it's not about the size. I mean, if I was going to weaponize these things, I'm not going to put, you know, a gun on it. You know, I'm not going to put, you know, a little BB gun on it. You know, if you're going to weaponize something, put a big weapon on it. It doesn't matter how big the robot is if it's packing something huge. Not that I'd ever use it. It's, you know, it's deterrent. I'm trying to take over the world, not destroy it. Why am I trying to take over the world? Well, because who else do you know that deserves to be emperor of this planet? Right, nobody. It's going to be me or nobody else. But Tobe, why do you have to use violence in a show of force? Well, because people are stupid. Oh, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. People individually are pretty sharp. They're pretty smart people. They're pretty reasonable. But once you get any people together, they get dumber. And the more people you have in a group, the dumber that group gets real fast. If you don't like the robot idea, I do have another idea for taking over the world. It's called 2 degrees of Tobe. And if you're familiar with 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, you're probably familiar enough with the concept that I don't need to tell you what 2 degrees of Tobe is, but I'm going to tell you anyway. 2 degrees of Tobe means that, well, this is the goal. 2 degrees of Tobe is the goal. And what we're going to try to do here is make sure that everybody in the world is either 1 or 2 degrees away from me, meaning you either know me personally, which you all do now. I mean, if you've met me in comm, if you've chatted with me, you officially know me. So if you don't know me, but you know somebody that knows me, you're good. 2 degrees of Tobe. You either know me personally or you know somebody who knows me personally. And so wherever you go, you can go, hey, do you know Tobe? And somebody goes, hey, yeah, I know that guy. Try it right now. I mean, I haven't spread this doctrine too far yet, but you might be surprised if you're out in public and you see some weirdness going on. Just go up to that person and go, hey, do you know Tobe? Geez, you're going to freak when a large percentage of these people say, yeah, in Omaha? Yeah, I know that guy. Yeah, you know Tobe? Yeah. And so that's how we're going to have world peace. If everybody personally knows me or knows a guy who knows me, then everybody will be like, I don't want to piss Tobe off. Tobe won't think I'm cool anymore if I invade Afghanistan or if I ethnically cleanse some people. Or if I invade Ukraine, Vlad Putin. Obviously, Vladdy Putin hasn't heard of 2 degrees of Tobe yet. And I think I need to be the person to tell him all about it. But as for right now, I think the operational protocol is going to be focus on 2 degrees of Tobe and then have the robot army be just, you know, my backup plan. Plan B. Speaking of plans, I ran into Juarez today. I haven't seen Juarez in at least, a month. I only see him about once every 6 to 8 weeks these days. And what's new with Juarez? Well, Juarez was out driving up to a lake some hours away, and his van, his famous van that he's had for at least a decade now, blew up. It melted down. And to make a long story short, or at least a moderately shorter, he got a new car. What kind of car did James Juarez get? You gotta be asking yourself. I know I was. And then he told me. And it's about a 1979, might be a 78, Lincoln Town Car. One of the Mark IVs, you know, one of those land yachts. And to make it even funnier, it's the two-door coupe version. And the thing is a boat. And it's got the chrome, like, push bumpers on it and everything in case you have to ram something. There wasn't a lot of production model cars out of Detroit with battering rams on them for consumers, but this was one of them. I appreciated it greatly. I asked him if he was going to run any blockades, and he said, well, the possibility wasn't out of the question. Yeah, I wish you guys, we might have to go interview Juarez someday, just because he's always funny. He's one of these guys who is jolly. And that's the only word I really can use to describe him, and I don't use that word in any other circumstances. But he's one of these people who is just generally a happy guy, and stuff is funny to him. So, you know, you say anything, and he kind of giggles a little bit. And then blah, 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 blah. Giggle, giggle, giggle. And I wish I could laugh like him and demonstrate it, but I can't. You might know some people like that. And so he's always entertaining as all hell to be around. And there's always the off chance that he's listening to this right now, because he was asking me what I was doing these days since the last time I talked to him, and I told him all about Anon Radio. And when I got home this morning, I then sent him a link and some information as to how to go about listening to Anon Radio. And hopefully he will do that. I'm doing everything I can to spread the word amongst all my friends and every radio person I've ever met. I've told them all about it, trying to get some interest. Maybe we can get some more listeners. Maybe we can get some more DJs. Maybe we can... What were the words that SMJ used? Maybe we can blow up the FM stations or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was. I'm not entirely sure I was even paying attention. It's not that I have an attention problem. I can pay attention to the things I want to pay attention to, or things that are important, or things that I need to learn. However, other things, they kind of slip through the cracks. But one thing I did notice, one thing I was paying attention to, is I noticed that my bank replaced its ATM, the drive-up one. You know how it is, drive up to get the magic money out of the machine. It's fun. But Tobe, you don't have any money. Well, I sort of have an allowance, you know, and it's my government subsidy for not, you know, taking over the world. Sometimes I have to go to the bank. And lately, I have been using the ATM. I normally don't use ATMs because they give me too easy of access to money, and I can't have money. Otherwise, there's danger. So, I don't use ATMs. But I wanted to buy some stuff on the internet about 2 months ago, so I got the magic card, and now I'm using the ATM as sparingly as possible. But the last time I used it, I noticed that they installed a new one, and I really like it because it's very green. It has green lights all over it, and it's not that I'm a big fan of the color green or anything, but it's the only green glowing ATM I've ever seen. I like it a lot. And there's little LEDs that flash when you got to take your money out, and there's green LEDs and flashing when you got to put the card in. It's the kind you put your card in and you pull it out and you do all this stuff, and ding, 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 it makes beep noises, and it's awesome. Touch screen and everything, you know, and it's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And while I was playing with it last time, I noticed that there was a headphone jack. Maybe you've seen headphone jacks on ATMs in banks near you. That's the first time I ever noticed it. Like I said, I haven't used ATMs in a long time, since pretty much shortly after they were invented. So this is the first time I ever saw an audio jack. Why is there an audio feed? You know, I understand why you need to have Braille on the buttons so blind people can use the ATM. I suppose that's what you need to have the audio jack for, too. So blind people, or the hearing, the visually impaired, can plug their headphones into there and listen to the instructions. Or even the audio impaired, I guess. I suppose that could help you. I'm confused as to why the bank would... I don't understand it, because I don't know any blind people who drive. And since I don't know any blind people who drive, I can't understand who it is that's driving up to this drive-up ATM who then needs to use the Braille or the audio function. But I don't understand a lot of stuff, so if it makes sense to you, that's great. It doesn't make sense to me, and that's okay. I don't need to have it make sense. I'm not one of those kind of people. The big question is, what does it sound like? Last time I was at the ATM, I did not have my headphones with me. I do not drive with my headphones on. That's dangerous. But I can guarantee you, the next time I go to the bank, I will be taking my headphones and I will be listening to what the ATM tells me. I already know what the VCR tells me. Yes, I still have a VCR. But I'm dying to know what the ATM has to say. And I'm sure at this point in time, you are too. So let me just, you know, make you this promise right now that I will go record what the ATM has to say, and you can hear Tobe going to the bank and making a cash withdrawal from the ATM live right here on Anon Radio. Won't that be exciting? I swear I'll do it, because I've got to now. I'm dying to know. What messages are you trying to tell me, Magic Money Machine? I'm going to hear the voice of the money god. I'm so excited about it. You should be too. So, make absolute certainty that you listen to me on Anon Radio over the next few days so we can hear what it sounds like. The ATM. Tobe makes a cash withdrawal. It'll be the cat's meow. It'll be a hoot. It'll be a good time. Well, I'm looking at the magic clock, and it says that I'm coming up at the end of my time. So I'd like to thank everybody again today for listening to me and my vaguely coherent ramblings here on Anon Radio. I'm always having a good time. My name is Tobe. I'm the president of the Dubious Goals Committee, and I am also its corrupt financial officer. Do not send me money. It will only go into my pocket and be used for nefarious purposes. Well, that's it for me. I'm out of here, but I want you to stay tuned, because coming up next, something very special. My personal friend, Sherston Sherston, and the first episode of Bitch Radio. Take it away, Sherston.
I was starving. Oh, boy, tow boy, who am I going to ask for help? When it is winter time, it is way too cold. Winter lasts for many months. When it is summer time, it is so hot. The drought ruined my farm and we lacked of water. Boy town nowadays is so much better. We have a good job and able to earn money easier. With good trading markets and fertile farms. We also have some nice asphalt roads. Our village has access to electricity. Boy town nowadays is great. We have plenty of food. We're able to take care of ourselves with our agriculture. The government helped every one of us and we're no longer poor. We share the land to make the farm. We have fish farm, crab farm. We grow various kind of plants. Anyone that has left Boytow, I hope you will miss us and come back to visit your homeland.
Well, you know, as a naturalist, or a biologist, I keep thinking, what is any self-respecting groundhog doing out in February anyhow? Groundhogs want to eat greens, tender young things. You know, February, that's the middle of the winter, the heart of the cold weather. Usually anything tender and green is going to be frozen stiff in most places, and a lot of times under snow and ice. You wouldn't think there'd be much out there to interest a groundhog. Well, in the southern mountains where I live, we don't get a lot of snow. But when we do get snow, it usually comes around the end of January or early February. Well, I love to go out after a good snowstorm. Usually I let it set on the ground for one night, and the next day I go out. I love to follow the animal tracks. In the summertime, you see a deer or a fox, you get a fleeting glimpse of this animal as it leaps away, and that's all. In the wintertime, though, if there's a good track in snow, you may never actually lay eyes on the animal, but you can be with that animal for hours. You can see everything that animal did. You can follow along, see where it fed. You can see its interactions with the environment. If it's a predator, you can see where it caught its prey. You can see where it peed. I mean, you can tell just about everything that animal did. You can sort of be with that animal and begin to understand its life, what it was doing, where it was going. To me, that's such a revealing time, such a great time to be out in the woods. Tracks are like stories. You can just follow along and they'll lead you off through thickets and mire and mountains and deserts on classic mythic journeys, journeys into the great narrative of life. Well, it was early February and we'd had a good hearty snow. I'd gotten up early in the morning and went up on the mountain. I had followed deer tracks and I could see where they had bedded down and where they had browsed in the thickets. And then I got onto the trail of a bobcat. It's like you hardly ever get to see a bobcat, but I felt like I got to see that bobcat through its tracks as they wound through the rhododendron thickets. I saw a place where it laid and rested up under the edge of this rock cliff. I could see where it lay there looking out over the thicket, and I found a little tuft of its fur there stuck to the ice. I smelled it, and that little tuft still had a faint, wild feline smell. Wow, essence of bobcat. Well, I wandered all over that mountain that day, and as I was heading back down, I see this set of tracks going across the trail. I looked, and they had little fingers on them. Look, a coon, huh? Well, I hadn't followed a coon in quite a while, and sure enough, it was heading for a creek. That made sense. You know, coons love to work along the creeks, turn over rocks, find crawfish and salamanders and minnows. So I started following those tracks, and they went right to the creek. But then there'd been no disturbance in the creek at all. The track just went right across and went up the other side of the mountain. And there was a vine hanging down there right beside the tracks. And on that vine, I see a bite mark. I looked at that bite mark, and it was a cut, like as if a knife had hit it. That was no coon that would leave teeth marks like that. This had to be a rodent with sharp cutting teeth. I looked at that track again, and I could count only four toes on the front paws. A coon has five, a groundhog has four. This was a groundhog. What was a groundhog doing out wallowing around in the snow? Well, I was going to find out. It hadn't eaten the bark off that vine, just went, sort of bit it as it walked by. And so I followed along, and it went on around the mountain, and it came to a hole, a groundhog hole. And there was a bunch of footprints all around the entrance. I could see where it went in, and I could see from its muddy footprints where it came out, tracking mud from the inside of that hole across the snow. You could see those tracks heading around the mountain again. Well, I got right on his trail again and I followed. Found another hole. The tracks went into another hole, finally came back out. I could see the muddy footprints in the snow again. It went into another hole and I kept following. And another hole. It went in and out of seven different holes by the time I got tired of following this groundhog. Well, I couldn't figure it out. I never saw any sign where it ate anything. Well, I went back and was talking to some of my neighbors. And I said, now what was that groundhog doing out this time of year? And my old buddy Theron says, son, don't you know what he was doing? This was a mating season. That was an old boar groundhog. See, buddy, he was out hunting him a mate. Well, he wasn't looking for anything to eat. He was looking for love in all the right places. And, of course, I couldn't tell what went on inside each of those dens because the tracks don't tell you everything.
This is the end of the line for me. The end of the line, yes.